Today's shiur is dedicated to Ili Nishmas Eitan Yaakov Ben Kalman Isser Olav HaSholem. We will begin today's shiur daf Chaf Aleph from Masechta Sukkah. We will begin on daf Chaf Amud Beis, six lines from the bottom. Tanan Hasam. We know that the Torah says, Zaysa Torah, Adam Kiyomis Baal, Kol HaBaal Oil, V'Kol Sheba Oil Yitmashiv Yamin. The Torah Akdash teaches us that a mace is metamei. A mace has the ability to give off tuma when it's in an oil. Everything that's in the oil of a mace receives a tumas mace. The Mishnah in Masechta Olos discusses what are the parameters that something could be considered an oil. The Mishnah says a tefach al tefach. It has to be a tefach al tefach width. Berum tefach. If by the height of a tefach, the loch is maybe it's a tuma, brings tuma. That means anything that's under that roof, the loch is, will become tuma, as we just described with a tumas oil. But we also have discussed that if the mace, there's a space of a tefach between the mace and the roof, what that accomplishes is that the mace, that the tumah only goes up to the roof, but it does not go past the height of the roof. So says the Gemara, Tanan Hasam, the Mishnah in Masechta Olos teaches us, Echad Chor, if there's a hole, Shechru Mayim, if you have a formation of stones, and a hole was penetrated through the water, Oy, Shrotzim, there's a hole in a wall, that was made by different insects, or salt caused the hole to be formed in a wall. Avonim, madbech avonim, or you have a pile, a stack of stones, and there's a hole in there that has the parameters of a oil. The kain savish al kairis, or you have a stack of beams that are used to build malal tuma. All of them are considered full-fledged oil, with all of the halachas of oil, as we began our shiur today. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda disagrees, and Rabbi Yehuda says, "Kol oil, any oil, she'ena osam de adam, that is not man-made, any oil is not considered a valid oil." Ask the Gemara, "My Tam, Rabbi Yehuda, why does it make a difference if it's man-made or not?" Answers the Gemara. Yalef oil mi mishkan. He learns Gzer Shav, the word oil which is stated here, and the word oil which it says by the mishkan. The Torah's Ksiv Hocha, it says here by the Tumas oil, Zois had Torah Adam Kiyomas ba oil, so that's where we learn the halacha of oil. The Ksiv Hosom, and it says by the mishkan, V'yifas es oil ala mishkan, the Moshe Rabbeinu placed the oil on the mishkan. Ma'ala halon, the mishkan was B'day Adam, the mishkan was man-made. Afkan, so too, here too, B'day Adam, says Rabbi Yehuda, only a man-made oil is considered an oil. Rabbanon, how would Rabbanon respond to Rabbi Yehuda's opinion? Says the Gemara, oil riba. In the parsha of Tumas Meis, in the parsha of Parah Aduma, the Torah uses the word oil many times, and since the Torah uses the word oil many times, that's a proof that any type of oil, any type of oil, whether man-made or not man-made, is considered a full-fledged oil. So the Mefarshim asks, Sefer Emek Sukkos asks, that the Medrash says that there was a tremendous nes that happened with the Mishkan, that the Mishkan was stood up by nes. It wasn't anybody that constructed the Mishkan. So why are we saying that we learn from the Mishkan that the oil has to be man-made? The oil wasn't man-made. So one teretz that he suggests is that even though Moshe Rabbeinu did not actually end up erecting the Mishkan, but the Torah says that he should, so it's considered like it's man-made. Another teretz that I saw is that Moshe Rabbeinu did not indeed put up the kroshim, the boards of the Mishkan, but Moshe Rabbeinu put up the oil, the covering of the Mishkan. And since Moshe Rabbeinu was the one that put up the covering of the Mishkan, that's enough for it to be, that's enough for it to be considered as if Moshe Rabbeinu, as it was man-made, and Rabbi Yehuda could learn the Gzeir Shava that we just learned. He taught us. Says the Gemara. But before going to this Gemara, we need to give a word of introduction. The Torah Akdosha, of course, speaks about the Parsha Paraduma, as we just spoke about. The Parsha Paraduma is that if somebody becomes Tamei with a Tamei Mace, the halacha is for the 7 days after he becomes Tamei, after he becomes Tamei Mace, he has to have the Paraduma, ash and Mayim Chaim, spritzed on him. It has to be done by a designated Kohen to do that Avoida. Now, there was a very fundamental machloikis between the Tzdoikim and the Prushim regarding that Avoida. Because we learned that a person we know who becomes Tamei and has to go to the mikveh, the day he goes to the mikveh, he's considered a Tfil Yoyim. The definition of a Tfil Yoyim is a person who went to the mikveh today, but has to wait for Harav Shemesh, for the day to pass, and then he's considered completely tahor. Our opinion was that people who were Tfil Yoyim, based on the Psukim, may do the Avoidah of doing the Avoidah Paraduma. They, however, felt that the Tzdoikim said that no, such an individual may not do the Avoidah of the Paraduma. And because we had this fundamental disagreement about who may not do the Avoidah Paraduma, as we've learned in Masechta Yuma, they went out of the way to show that they didn't want to agree with them. And the person who did the Avoidah Paraduma was an individual who was specifically a Tfil Yoyim. But because they had this kula, they had this leniency, that they used a Tfil Yoyim for the Avoidah Paraduma, so they wanted to go to the other extreme. And what they did was that in order that people should not be mezalzel, should not disrespect the Avoidah Paraduma, they were careful that all of the people who were involved in the Paraduma and all of the Kalim that were involved in the Paraduma were on a very high level of Tahara. On a very, very high level of Tahara, the person, that the people who brought the water, as we're about to learn, were children who never became Tamei. The Kohanim who did the Srefa Parah, every day they spritzed on him from all of the Eifer Parah that they had left over from before. So says the Gemara, based on this introduction. V'savra Yehuda, kol oil shanay also by Adam ena oil. Is it true that his opinion is that if it's not man-made, it's not considered an oil? V'mini, ask the Gemara, it says in a Mishnah, Masechta Parah, Perek Gimel, Mishnah Beis, Chatzeres ha-yibnuyis b'Yerushalayim, there were special courtyards in Yerushalayim, v'tachteim cholo, and under those chatzeres, they knew it was absolutely hollow. They built it on top of platforms, nekever tohim, because, as we just said, they wanted to be extremely careful that there's no tumah, that these children who were going to get involved in doing this avoidah should not be involved in tumah, have any connection to tumah. So they made under, they had them on top of platforms, because if they were on the floor, there may be a concern that there's tumah under the ground. But if they're on a platform, so there's a space between the tumah and the platform, as we just discussed a little earlier, and the tumah would not penetrate above the platform. It's very interesting to point out, there's a tshuva in the Shas of Tshuva Smichas Yitzchak, Chelik Yud Simen Mem Beis. He says there's a minig in certain communities that a pregnant woman doesn't go to a cemetery. And he discusses what is the origin for that minig. And he says that the origin for that minig is actually our Gemara. Because our Gemara says that there were women who were so anxious that their children should be those that are involved in the Paraduma. And because they were so anxious that their children should be involved in the Paraduma, they kept themselves in total Tahara. They kept themselves in total Tahara. Every mother has the aspiration that her child should be that child that will be able to be the person working with the Tahara. And that's why when they're pregnant, they don't go to Beis HaKfar, so they shouldn't become Tamei. So they had these platforms there. And Noshim Urbais, they used to bring pregnant women, the Yoldasham, and that they would have the babies there. Umagadlis b'neim Sham Lapara. And they raised the children. They didn't take them out from those places until that they should be able to do the avodah paraduma. So the Rishonim make a number of comments. One question I saw is that doesn't the child become tamei when he comes out from his mother's womb? We know that every woman, as she has a baby, becomes tamei. So why isn't that a concern? How do we resolve that concern? So the Meiri says that there were only two types of tumah they were concerned about. They were concerned about tumas mace, and they were concerned about tumas keri. So they, as we're learning now, they did all sorts of things to prevent them from being exposed to tumas mace, and they were only allowed to be there until they were 7 years old. 7, 8 years old, the Tosefta says. Once the child was 7, 8 years old, we already have to be concerned that he had an emission of keri. And once we have to be worried that he had an emission of keri, then we have nothing to gain by him being there anymore. He's not the child that would be able to do this avodah. Taking this approach solves two problems. The first problem is we said that the child is born, he's exposed to tumas yoledes, tumas nida. But we know every woman, as soon as she has a baby, becomes a nida. But now the way we're learning, that isn't the concern because we're not worried about tumas nida. And similarly, there isn't a concern why these children, as they were young, nursed from their mothers. Shouldn't we be concerned that they come in contact with the mothers who are nidais? But again, the way we're learning now, the halacha is that we're only worried about tumas keri and tumas mace. We're not worried about any other type of tumah. In fact, there's a very interesting Magen Avraham. The Magen Avraham in Simen Shin Mem Gimel Sif Cotton Beis brings from the Rekeach, what's the halacha about a wife of a kohen who's pregnant? May she go into a cemetery? May she go into an oil of mace? We know that a kohen is not to become tamei, and here we don't know what this baby she's carrying is. Is she a boy or a girl? If he's a boy, he's a kohen who's not to be exposed to tumah. So he says we could be lenient because there's a sfek sfeika. We don't know if it's a boy or a girl, and even if it's a boy, we don't know if he's going to be a nafil, and a nafil is not a viable child. But here, says Aisur Achroidim, say that we see how careful they were to prevent their children from becoming tamei, so their children should be able to do the avodah. So if just like here we're so concerned to make sure that the children don't become tamei, that they should be able to do the avodah, similarly, if we want to protect the kohanim from becoming tamei, so if a woman is pregnant, maybe she shouldn't indeed bring her child into a place where he could be exposed to tumah. Continues the Gemara. Umagadlis b'neim Sham Lapara. They raised their children there in absolute tahara. And now, as we said, that these are going to be the children that are going to take the water from the shiloyach, which will be used by the kohen who's going to do the avodah with the paraduma. So what they did was, b'vin shvarim, they brought oxen, val gabeim delosos, on the top of the oxen, they had these doors, and children sat on top of these doors. And I saw that they specifically brought doors. Why didn't they just bring regular boards of wood? So I saw them first explain, because a regular board of wood, which is meant to sit on, is makabel tumas medris. We want to bring something that's not going to be makabel tumah. A plain piece of wood is not makabel tumah. The kushel evan b'dayim, and they specifically used cups made out of stone, which are not mekabel tumah either. Shigiu l'shiloyach, when they came to the shiloyach, which was a stream which was right next to Yerushalayim, yod l'taych hamayim, these children would go into the stream, umilam, v'yashvil hamaldasas. They would fill up the cups with water, and like that, they would go back. Rav Yosef Emer, mimkaimai haimashalshul, from where he was sitting, on top of the door, he would put down his cup, he would have a string on his cup, we're concerned that if he's going to step on the ground of the stream, who knows what's going to be under the stream. And just like we said before, we have to be concerned for Kevah Atayim, so avoid the concern of Kevah Atayim, they didn't get off the horse, they didn't get off the oxen. V'tanya, and the Brisa says, Rabbi Yudayim, Eloyim, V'in Dalsas, they didn't have to bring these special doors. El Shvarim. They were on the axon themselves because the axon were very wide. And since the axon were very wide, that's why there's no problem of Tumas oil, because the axon serve as an oil that when they're traveling, they shouldn't be traveling on top of Tumah. Ask the Gemara, but how could the axon, according to what we learned at the beginning of our shir, how could those axons serve as an oil? For shvarim, the oil shein osu b'dei adam hu. It's something that's not made from, that's not man-made. And we started our shir today by teaching us, v'ktani Rabbi Yehuda oim aloi hayim avim dalsas al shvarim. So why could we rely on the shvarim if they're not man-made? And Rabbi Yehuda holds that a non-man-made oil is not considered an oil. Says the Gemara, Ki Aser Reb Dami Amar Reb Elazar Ma'ida Rabbi Yehuda B'Malai Egrif. That even though Rabbi Yehuda, as we started the Shia saying, is very strict, and he says that if it's not man-made, it's not an oil, but if it's K'malai Egrif, if it's the size of a fistful, then the halacha is it can be used, then it's a kosher oil, even though it's not man-made. So we're learning from here that even though it has to be man-made, if it's the size of a fist, it doesn't have to be man-made. Tanya mihachi, and so too, says the Gemara, there's a braisa that supports this approach. Rav Yehuda b'shkifin, Rav Yehuda agrees with stones that got disconnected from a mountain, the wind blew them out, and you have now a hole where there was originally stone, or when the kike slime, or their crevices in the rocks, that they're all considered a legitimate oil. And since they're considered a legitimate oil, because they're large enough to be an oil, and therefore the halacha is that they're considered an oil because of their size. So the way I saw that the Rishonim explained this Gemara, even though we started the shir, by Rabbi Yehuda commenting that we learn from the Mishkan that the only definition of an oil is something which is man-made. So how could the Gemara now start, ask the Ritva, start differentiating? Well, it depends on the size. So he says that the halacha of oil we really learn from a Metzora. And in a Metzora's oil, we don't find that the Torah differentiates between man-made or not man-made. And therefore, we use the Gzeir Shavah, which Rabbi Yehuda began the shear with, only on a limited basis. What that means to say is, it's only used on a limited basis, that only when it's not a large oil, if it's not man-made, it's not considered a valid oil. Under other circumstances, it is considered a valid oil. There's a very interesting question that the Paiskim discuss based on this Gemara. Many times in Shas, the Gemara says, an oil zoruk loishma oil. That an oil that's meant to move is not considered a full-fledged oil. So he asked the Rishonim, Rabbi Yehuda is saying that the Shvarim, because they're wide enough, they're considered an oil even though they're not man-made. But now we have a problem. Isn't it a oil zoruk, something that's constantly moving, and yet we see that it's considered an oil? Why? Oil zorik ain't a zorik. Oil zorik is not a zorik. So Noida Behuda says, from here we see that the oil zorik can be considered, something that's movable can be considered oil. And he says that, the Rashba says, that since we have doors that are put on top of the axon, they also oil zorik, but since they're meant to be there, that makes them into an oil even though they're moving. Why does the Night of Yehuda discuss this? Because the Night of Yehuda discusses the question of moving an umbrella on Shabbos. Is it considered that you're making an oil when you're walking with that umbrella? And if we say oil zorok loishmei oil, it's not considered oil. Says the Night of Yehuda from our Gemara, we see that just because something is moving doesn't mean that it's not an oil. The Chasam Sofer says that certainly one should not carry an umbrella on Shabbos Yontif, but he says he can't agree that, he says it's lab mishnas chassidim, it's not something that one should do, but he says you can't suggest that opening an umbrella or carrying an umbrella would be an issa d'oraisa. Ask the Gemara, why Rabbi Yehuda said that even though if it's not man-made, it's not an oil, but if it's the certain the size of an egrif, it's an oil. But ask the Gemara, Delos the yesh bekama agrifim. The Delos certainly has the qualifications of an oil. So the question is, why was Rabbi Yehuda against bringing a door? It seems that he holds because there doesn't have a din of an oil, and we need to put these children on top of an oil. So the Gemara's question is, a Delos certainly has all of the qualifications of an oil, and therefore, why can't we let them go on the Dalsus? Amar Abaya, we need to understand Rabbi Yehuda differently. What Rabbi Yehuda means to say is, of course the Delos is an excellent oil. What Rabbi Yehuda means to say is, there's no reason to use a Delos. We don't have to have a Delos. We could use the oxen himself. Rav Amar, Rabbi Yehuda has a different understanding of Yehuda. According to Rabbi Yehuda, loy hayamavin dalsus means that they shouldn't bring dalsus. Loy hayamavin dalsus kol ikar. We don't want to bring doors. Why? When the child is sitting on top of the door, he feels very confident. And because he feels very confident, he's not going to be scared. He may stick his head past the door. The door that he's sitting on is an oil, but he may stick his head past that oil. And again, as we've been learning the entire shir, he may put his head over kever tahayim. He may put his head over a place with his tumah. And because we're concerned that that shouldn't happen, Chazal said, Rabbi Yehuda said, don't bring the door. We don't want him to be so comfortable because we're worried that if he's going to stick his head out, the yitma bekever tahayim. This Gemara actually is a raya that Kahanim should not go into a basic kvaris in a car. Because even though we're seeing that something that's movable could still be considered an oil, and therefore they should avoid being in a car in a basic kvaris. Says the Gemara, Tanya Kavasi the Rava, there's a braisa that supports Rava. Rav Yehuda Amar Lo Hayam Mevin Dalsus Kol Ikar. They specifically did not bring these doors. We're concerned that the child is going to become too comfortable. And we're concerned, he may stick out his head or one of the other parts of his body. We specifically brought the accent from Mitzrayim, which the Gemara Masechta teaches us that they were the best type of oxen, shekriseim rechavos, and they were very wide animals. But tinoikus yoshvin al gabeim, and the children sat on top of these oxen. The kosher shall ever be a dame, and they held these stone cups in their hands, which, as we described earlier, won't be makabel tumah. Higiul shilayach, when they got to that stream, milam yardu milam, they went down and filled up the kosher, vol v'yosh al gabeim, and then they went on top of the animals. Ask the Gemara after this entire introduction. Vremita, what about a bed? The yesh bekama greifim. A bed certainly has the size of many fistfuls. The Tanan, yet we learned in our Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda ben Hagen, hayinu shiyun yishin etach samitim v'nei zakenim. We were careful not to sleep under a bed in the sukkah. Now the question is, why should they not be able to sleep on? Why is that a problem? The bed should be considered why should that be permitted? Shouldn't it be considered oil? Answers the Gemara, Shani mita hoil agabasuya. The purpose of the bed is not for what's on top of the bed. The purpose of the bed is for what's under the bed. And since that's the purpose of the bed, therefore, there's no problem that that's why they're not considered an oil. An oil is considered an area which covers the bottom, not the other way around. Ask the Gemara, Shvarm Nami Lagaban Asuyan. So if you're going to make that argument, we could say the same thing by animal. The animal's not made for what's below it. The animal's meant to be on top of it. Answers the Gemara, Kiyasa Ravid Amar Reb Elazar, Shani Shvarm, Umaginim El Aroyim. Sometimes when it's raining or other situations, the shepherds put themselves under the animals, B'chama B'nei Chama, when it's hot, B'ksham B'nei G'shamim, when it's raining, so they are made to be under them. Ask the Gemara, if you're going to take that approach, Yochemitanami, you could say by the bed, Hoyel Magina Aminol Masan Moshotachter, the bed is used to keep things under the bed. But it's very interesting to point out that the Gemara, Masechta Baba Basra, Daf Nun Ches Amar Aleph teaches us, Eizu Mita Shal Talmid Chachamim, what does the bed of a Talmid Chacham look like? Kol Shein Tachter, if there's nothing under the bed, the only thing that should be under one's bed is shoes. And that's why there's a very serious issur that one may not leave food under the bed. And if somebody leaves food under the bed, according to the Gra, that food should be immediately disposed. So, but the point is, why are you saying that a bed is only made for on top of it? The halacha is that you could put the bed is made for things under it as well. Ella Amarava Shani Shvarim However Soim Lahagin B'Mnayin Shilhem. The top of the animals is here to support and protect what's on the bottom of the top. Shnemar, as the pasuk says, or a pasuk in Eiv, or a basa tal bisheni, atzamis v'gidin tzecheni. And as Tosfos points out, even though this pasuk is a pasuk that speaks about human beings, and here we're speaking about animals, but it's the same point. Just like we have a body and we have different parts of our body to protect the other parts of the body, the animal, the shor, protects the shor. Vibay Seima, another way of explaining the opinion of Yehuda, Rabbi Tamei, Dama Sukkah Diras Kvah Binan. As we've been learning from the beginning of the Masechta, Rabbi Yehuda's opinion is that a sukkah has to be a Diras Kvah. And under the bed is an oil, Diras Arai. Even if we consider a bed an oil, certainly everybody will agree that it's an oil Arai. And therefore, the sukkah oil, also oil Arai, and therefore the oil Arai, the area under the bed, is not mevatel the oil kva, which is the sukkah. Ask the Gemara. For Rav Shimon Amar Nami Sukkah Diras Kva Embinan. Rav Shimon is the opinion that holds that a sukkah has to be Diras Kva, as we learned early in the Masechta. Rav Shimon held that a sukkah has to have three full walls. So we see that Rav Shimon holds a sukkah as a diras kva. Yet in our Mishnah, Rav Shimon doesn't allow to one sleep under the bed. But if Rav Shimon holds that the sukkah is a diras kva, don't we have the svara that we just learned, that le'osa oil arai revatel oil kva? So we see Rav Shimon holds that also oil arai revatel oil kva. And it says, that's exactly what the machloikus was. Masav also oil arai mevatel oil kva. Rav Shimon holds that an oil arai ki mevatel oil kva, and therefore one may not sleep under the bed. And Mar Savar, whereas Rav Yehuda holds lo also oil arai, the area under the bed is an oil arai, and lo also oil arai cannot be mevatel an oil kva, and therefore the area under the bed is not considered a problem to sleep under it. Gemara just went through quite a discussion about the Parah Aduma. There's a famous story when a number of years ago there was discussion that they discovered an animal that was a Parah Aduma. And everybody's very, very excited. So Rav Moshe said, we can't believe that that's the Parah Aduma that we're waiting for. Because Rav Moshe said that halacha is that a Parah that could be used for a Parah Aduma has to be at least 2 years old. If the animal that they just discovered is going to be the Parah Aduma, so we have a problem. We have to believe, Rav Moshe said, the Mashiach achak loy b'chol yom shiyovoy. The Mashiach is coming every day. And this animal, we have to wait 2 years. That's against our Amunah. Our Amunah is coming, we believe the Mashiach is coming immediately. Amar Rav Shimon, so we learned in our Mishnah, Ma'is v'tevi avdei, we discussed that Tevi, the Eved of Rav Gamliel, slept under the bed in the Sukkah. And he said, if that's what he did, lo yotzi dei chavosai. Tanya, Amar Rav Shimon sichosai, Shor ben Gamliel. from the discussion of Chimiel Lamadnu Shnei Dvarim. Lamadnu Shavarim Avadim Ptur Min HaSukkah. We learned that Avadim are not obligated in the Sukkah. So Tosfos and the Ritva asks, why do we have to have a special limud that an Eved is part of Sukkah? Sukkah is a mitzvah sesachus man grama, and we know that every mitzvah sesachus man grama, Noshim and an Avadim are exempt. So Tai answer that since the pasuk says regarding Sukkah, Teishvu ke'ein teduru, and just like in our homes we live with our wives, maybe the women should have to sit in the Sukkah as well. That's why we need a special limit to say that Avadim are parted from the Sukkah. And we also learn Shayot Shintach Samita, if somebody sleeps under the bed, Layotzi de Chavasai. Ask the Gemara, the wording that the Gemara used, Mesichosai Sher Gamaliel, is not the typical word that's used in Shas. And therefore the Gemara asks, Vilema Midvarov Shal Gamaliel. Shouldn't the Brisev say the word Midvarov? Answers the Gemara, Milsa Agavurcha Kamashwan. The Gemara is teaching us something else. Yehad Amar Rav'ach Bar'ad, Kiyadar Amar Rav'ach Bar'ada, V'amalai Amar Rav'ach Bar'ada, Amar Rav'amnun Amar Rav, Menayin Shafilo Sichas Talmid Chom Tzrich Limud. For everything that the Talmud Chacham says we have to learn, Shenemar, because the Pasuk says, V'lei Elo Yibayl. The Pasuk says, the beginning of Tehillim, V'ho Yukei Tshosa Apal Gemayim, Ashapiria Yitem Be'itoi, V'lei Elo Yibayl. La Yibayl, the words, the Leyu, even the leaves of the Talmud Chacham, of his words, are very important. And that's why we have to learn, that's what we learned that from saying the story, we learned so many halachas. So the way the Rishonim explained this Gemara, what Rav Shimon was trying to teach the Talmidim is when you hear a Talmud Chacham say something, pay attention to what he's saying. Because when you pay attention to what he's saying, that you'll learn so much. And Rabbeinu Chananel explains that just like the leaves are not considered the primary part of the tree, but you can't have fruit without tree, so you can't have fruit without leaves. The sikh of the Talmid Chachamim is so critical for us to be able to learn, Torah. So I saw two pshatim in what the Gemara means when we say sikhs, Talmid Chachamim, Tzrich Limud. One is, much halacha could be learned from what the Talmid Chachamim say. Another pshat that I saw is not just much halacha could be taught from what could be learned from the Talmud Chacham, but the way the Talmud, not just what they say, but the way they speak. Talmid Chacham speak in a very refined manner. And because the Talmid Chacham speak in such a refined manner, Tzricha Limud, we can learn from that. But the Klaus Merger Rebbe used to say that what does the Gemara mean? Sichas Talmid Chacham Tzricha Limud. That every time you hear a Talmud Chacham speak, what you learn from that speech that the Talmud Chacham makes is Tzricha Limud. That what should we devote our lives to? That we should devote our lives to learning Torah. Sichas Talmid Chachamim, what comes out of the Sicha of every Talmud Chacham, is Tzricha Limud, that we should learn more and more. I saw from the Tratak of the Rabbi in the Sefer Yismach Yisrael, he says a very similar word. From everything that the Talmud Chacham speaks, it's supposed to bring us closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's supposed to help us get closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and therefore we should pay attention to every word he says. Another pshat that I saw from the Sefer Beis Yisrael is Sichas Talmid Chacham Tzricha Limud is that what makes the speech of a Talmud Chacham so very special? What makes the speech of a Talmud Chacham so very special is that a Talmud Chacham, when he gives a shir, when he gives a drasha, he never gives a shir or he never gives a drasha without preparing first. Sichas Talmid Chachamim Tzrich Limud means that before the Talmud Chacham speaks Tzrich Limud, he prepares himself to make sure that he's speaking the right thing. The Maral explains, so just like the Gemara says, that the speech of a Talmud Chacham is compared to a leaf. What does that mean? That sometimes we see somebody say something and Talmud Chacham speaks and it's not so easy to understand what he just said. So he says, just like to get to the fruit of a tree, It isn't always easy to get to the fruit of a tree, but it's worth the effort. So too, sometimes we learn a Gemara, we learn a Sefer, and it's not so easy to understand what it says in the Gemara and what it says in the Sefer. But we're supposed to try Tzricha Limud. It's not something that we should just say, well, I don't understand what it says. What we're supposed to take from this is that everything that we learn, everything that Talmud Chacham says, must be extremely important. And therefore, since it's so very important, we should spend time trying to understand what they say, even though it doesn't come so easy. Rashi quotes the famous Medrash. Rashi says, "Yofes sichosin shel avdei aves mitaroshin shel bonim." That what Eliezer spoke, we find that the Torah repeats over and over the entire dialogue between Eliezer and Besuel and Lavan. Why? Because from every word, we can learn so much. Even in stories that we don't see there's so much to learn, there is so much depth in everything that they teach us. Teaches us the Mishnah, Samech Sukkosoi. If somebody makes a sukkah, b'kari amita, by using the sides of the bed, in other words, you have a bed on the floor, and then you raise the walls, k'sheira. The Tanakhama holds, it's a kosher sukkah. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, im eni yochel lamim b'fnei atzmai, if the schach that's on them can't stand by itself, psula, that it's not a valid sukkah. Ask the Gemara, my time Rabbi Yehuda, why is Rabbi Yehuda being so machmer? Says the Gemara, pligba Rabbi Zeir of Abba Bamamo, charam abneshin engloi kva. Since you use for the walls of your sukkah something that is not firm, and as we said earlier in our shiur today, the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda is that a sukkah has to be a diras kva. So if you make a sukkah that is not in that fashion, it's not a diras kva, so then it's not a valid sukkah. You can't have the schach resting. We learned in our previous shiurim that the sukkah may not be made out of anything. The schach may not be made out of anything that's mekabel tuma. Today we're learning a new shitta. The shitta is that anything that supports the schach is also not allowed to be made from something which is mekabel tuma. Many rishonim ask if that's what the Gemara means to say. So then the halacha ought to be that you can never make the walls of a sukkah only from plain boards of wood, and therefore other rishonim explain that we're not allowed to make something, we're not allowed to use something for the walls of the sukkah that you may end up using as the schach. And therefore, those Rishonim explain that this, in a case where I'm going to use a stone wall to make my sukkah. So everybody knows that you don't use a stone wall to make a sukkah. So there is no concern that you're going to use the wall out of stone for your schach. But in a situation where you're using wood, and the wood is mekabel tuma, there's a real concern that you may use that wood for schach. And as we learned, you can't use such wood for schach. Ask the Gemara, my benai, what's the practical nafkamina between these two explanations? Says the Gemara, k'ganshinot shvudim shel barzel. If you took four metal poles, the sicha chaleim, and you put the schach on top of them. L'man damu l'fi she'en kva, that it's not firm, yesh lo kva. However, according to Mandom that's concerned that you're not allowed to use to support the schach something which is mekabel tuma, you're ending up using something which is mekabel tuma. Comments to Gemara, Amar Abai loy shana el shesomach. Only in a situation where you put the schach directly on these bed. Avel sichach gabe amita, that means you have a bed, and now you have boards extending from your bed, k'sheira. My tama, l'man don't fish ain't l'kva, that it's not firm enough, hare yesh l'kva. This is firm enough. L'man don't m'nei shamida b'davim mekabel tumo, hare, here you're just using boards. Boards are not mekabel tumo. So now, the Paiskim discuss, what is the halacha? May we or may we not use something which is mekabel tumo to support the schach? So the Magen Avraham, the Shulchan Aruch, says that the sukkah that is made, that is supported, the schach that is supported by something which is mekabel tuma, is not puzzle. And the Ramah doesn't make any comment on that. So seemingly, it's also the opinion of the Ramah that such a sukkah is kosher. But the Magen Avraham says that even though that's the halacha, he says that's only b'di'evit. L'chatchila, he says that even the Shulchan Aruch agrees that you should not use something which is mekabel tumah to support yischach. The Chazon Ish says that not only are you not allowed to use a davar mekabel tumah to support yischach, but the Chazon Ish's opinion is that a maimed a maimed. That means, let's say according to Chazon Ish, you put a piece of wood. You'll use something which is mekabel tumah to support yischach, but you use something which is not mekabel tumah, but you'll have nails in it that keep it together. So in other words, let's say you'll use wood boards as your walls or your sukkah. So as we just discussed, wood is not mekabel tumah, so it should be fine to put your schach on top of the wood. But let's say you keep the wood together with nails, with hooks that are made out of metal. Metal is mekabel tumah, so that's called a maimed de maimed. And a maimed de maimed, according to the Chazon Ish, not only may you not use a maimed to be that's mekabel tumah for schach, for your sukkah, but even a maimed maimed may not be used in constructing your sukkah. However, says Rabbeinu Tam, that even those who are lenient and say we may use a mekabel davar mekabel tumah to hold up your schach, but if you're going to have a situation where if you won't have this object, which is mekabel tumah, your whole sukkah will become posel, then he'll agree that you can. Everybody would agree that sukkah is not a kosher sukkah. Where does this come up? This comes up, people put down the schach mat, or the schach, whatever they put down, and there's a concern, especially in certain places, which it's quite windy, somebody, that whole schach could fly away. So what they do is, they put on top of the schach, different heavy objects, they'll keep the schach down from flying away. According to Rabbeinu Tam, we have to be extremely machmer not to do that. Because according to Rabbeinu Tam, using such a material on top of your schach, everybody agrees is not kosher. And therefore, if he wants to keep his schach down, he should only use something that is not mekabel tumah. You could use boards of wood, but something which is mekabel tumah is a problem to be put on top of the schach if you're concerned that your schach is going to fly away. On the other hand, those who are not machmer for the Chazon Ish, and those that hold that as long as the only issue is a maimed, but a maimed, the maimed is not a problem. So what happens if you have a sukkah made out of whatever material, out of stone, out of metal, the walls are made out of stone, the walls are made out of metal, and then you put the schach on top of them. And we're learning, we quoted the Magen Avraham, the L'chatchila one should not have a maimed that's mekabel tumah. So how do we solve that problem? So most paiskim are of the opinion, as long as, not the Chazon Ish obviously, as long as the schach is not directly on top of something that's mekabel tumah, then even though below it there is something that's mekabel tumah, it's no longer a problem. And therefore, they suggest that let's say you'll have sukkah that's made out of metal. The walls are made of metal, the walls are made out of stone, whatever. Take a wood frame and put that wood frame on top of your sukkah. So now the schach is not on the metal. The schach is not on the stone. The schach is on top of wood. And even though below that wood, there are materials that are not kosher for schach, that are mekabel tumah, that isn't the problem. Because the only time it's a problem is the schach is actually touching such a material.